One sunny morning in the autumn of 1881, Sally Lockhart stood in the garden and watched her little daughter play, and thought that things were good. She was wrong, but she wouldn't know how or why she was wrong for 20 minutes yet. The man who would show her was still finding his way to the house. For the moment, she was happy, which was delightful, and she knew she was, which was rare. She was usually too busy to notice. She was happy, for one thing, about her home. It was a large place in Twickenham called Orchard House, a Regency building, open and airy, with iron balconies and a glass-roofed veranda facing the garden. The garden itself, enclosed by a mellow brick wall, consisted of a wide, sunny lawn with some flower beds and a vine and a fig tree against the wall on one side, and the group of old apple and plum trees at the bottom, which gave the house its name. Against the wall on the side opposite the fig tree, a curious structure had been built, glass-roofed like the veranda, but open all the way along and containing what looked like the track for a large model railway, supported on trestles about 3 feet high. It had been built to shelter some experiments in the photography of motion, and there was more work to do on it, but it would wait until her friends came back. Her friends. She was happy in her friends. Webster Garland, 65, a photographer, and her partner in Garland and Lockhart, the firm that joined their names, and Jim Taylor, at 20, 2 or 3 years younger than herself, were all she had for a family. They shared the house. They shared adventures. They were bohemian. They were unrespectable. They were staunch and faithful. And at the moment, they were in South America. Every few years, Webster Garland gave in to the urge to wander into some wild part of the world and photograph it. This time, Jim had gone with him, so Sally was on her own. But not really alone. There was the staff, and that was something else she was happy with. Ellie the maid, and Mrs. Perkins, the cook housekeeper, and Roberts, who looked after the garden and the horses. And there was the photography shop in Church Street, where she went once a week to look over the accounts. And there was her own business in the city, a financial consultancy which she'd built up successfully against the expectations of everyone who thought that women couldn't do that sort of thing, or shouldn't if they wanted to remain feminine, or wouldn't if there wasn't something wrong with them. She'd become so busy that she'd recently had to take on a partner, a dry, ironical young woman called Margaret Haddo, a graduate and a feminist like herself. And finally, there was the nurse she'd engaged to help her with the child, Sarah Jane Russell, 18, competent, kindly, and in love, without his knowledge or anyone else's, with Jim Taylor. But the centre of all this happiness was the child. Harriet was 1 year and 9 months old, autocratic, willful, and so solidly sure of everyone's love and attention that she gave off happiness herself as the sun gives off light. Her father, Frederick Garland, Webster's nephew, had never seen her, for he had died in a fire on the night she was conceived, and if he'd lived, Sally would be Mrs. Garland and Harriet legitimate. Sally's love for Frederick had been hard won and given without stint. What she felt for Harriet was as deep as her blood, as deep as her life itself. She'd never loved anyone or anything as much, never known it was possible. At first, after Frederick's death, when their business lay in ruins, she felt she didn't want to live. But when she felt the stubborn life inside her, she knew she did and knew she must. And apart from the terrible gap that Frederick had left, life was good now, as good as it ever could be for an unmarried mother in Queen Victoria's time, better by far than for plenty of women trapped in unhappy marriages. She had money and independence and friends and a home and interesting work, and she had her precious Harriet. She plucked 2 figs, newly ripened, and took them over to the orchard. Sarah Jane was sitting on the tree seat Webster had built, sewing something, while Harriet was helping her toy bear Bruin climb a rope to get some imaginary honey. Sally joined Sarah Jane on the seat. Do you like figs? She said, handing her one.
I love them, said the nurse.
Thank you. Sally could see past the side of the house to where someone was consulting a paper at the front gate. He opened it and came through, moving out of sight as he made for the front door.
Hattie Face, come and share the fig, she said.
Harriet, seeing food, dropped Bruin and came at once. She looked suspiciously at the soft red flesh, packed with tiny seeds. Sally took another bite.
Like this, she said. If you don't try it, you won't know what it's like. Bruin will have some.
They fed Bruin, and then Harriet nibbled the fig, and then she wanted all the rest.
She's growing so fast, said Sarah Jane.
Look, I can't turn these petticoats down any more. They'll do this time, but then she'll need new ones.
We ought to measure her, said Sally. Draw a line on the wall.
Shall we do that, Hattie? See how tall you're getting?
Fig, said Harriet accusingly, holding out her hand for Sarah Jane's.
Fig? Peas?
Sally laughed.
No, that's Sarah Jane's. Look, here comes Ellie, with a visitor.
Harriet, proprietorial, turned to see who had come to pay court to her this time. Ellie was making her way down the lawn, followed by the man from the front gate. He was slight and middle-aged, as far as Sally could tell, and he wore a shabby brown suit and bowler hat. He was holding a large white envelope.